Hello and welcome back to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Billington, and tonight I'm joined by Timo Albers-Daly and Ellie Mae Taylor to review the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. How are you both?
I'm good, thank you. It was very nice to have a four-day weekend instead of two. How are you?
Not too bad. I've spent most of my four-day weekend in the workshop rebuilding the engine for my MG. So that's actually going well. We've got a crankshaft in, we've got a camshaft in, got a fuel pump on, found out we need to order some new pistons because someone's previously bought it out. We're 20 thou over, so I need to order some new ones of those. But otherwise, yeah, all the right parts are coming together in about the right order without too much of a fuss. So end of May, we'll have that in the car and running, I think, is going to be the realistic deadline, given that I've got working weekends still to come and hurdles still to overcome. But we should have reciprocating pistons within a series of cylinders connected to a crankshaft by the end of this week, which will be good.
That sounds promising.
Yeah, all the main components required for an engine to work will roughly be in the agglomerated location of one block by the end of this week, I think, is the target. Timo, have you been doing mechanicking engineering work, or have you been shut away in a darkened room?
I think we both know I've not been doing either of those things, but that's all fine by my standards. I'm feeling more better than a duck in a bow tie, so I'm all good over here.
Excellent, which means we can jump straight into reviewing the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Some great action across the weekend. One of the bigger headline pieces of news was Arvid Lindblad taking the record for youngest winner in Formula 2 at 17 years old. He took the win in the sprint race this weekend for Campos after Richard Vachon was handed a 5-second penalty for shoving a driver wide. And Arvid Lindblad does not turn 18 until the 8th of August, born in 2007. While we're on the subject of age, we might as well quickly mention that Richard Vachon now leads the Formula 2 championship in the same weekend that Oscar Piastri leads the Formula 1 championship. However, Richard is a year older than Oscar. Such has been Richard's tenure in Formula 2. But that is something for our discussions over on the Formula 2 review podcast team and I have just recorded. Elsewhere, when it comes to unwanted achievements, Lance Stroll now has the record for the most Q1 exits in Formula 1, up to 75 now, which takes away the mantle from Kevin Magnussen, interestingly enough.
And, quite amusingly, he tried defending it by saying if you stuck the McLaren drivers in a Sauber, they'd get more Q1 eliminations than he did. And everyone goes, yeah, but you're in an Aston Martin.
Which isn't
quite. And also, 2023 happened. Yeah. So I don't know what your excuse is. You've been on the podium, mate. You've got pole position.
He's had good cars at times. He's just sort of squandered them a bit. Pink Mercedes for one and all sorts, and decent Williams as well. He was at Williams for a good spell when Williams were tolerable, certainly Q2 regulars.
He got a podium with Williams. That was his first podium
in Azerbaijan, where Valtteri Bottas checked that he was allowed to spray champagne on him with his dad. But anyway, yeah, that's the news from Lance Stroll. And then, of course, we get to qualifying, where George, Oscar, and then Max each broke and set the quali lap record around the Jeddah circuit. In the end, it was a 100th of a second at the top. So really not a lot in it at all. But impressive that we've got these cars and these drivers operating at such a level that George Russell will go first to break the circuit lap record. Oscar will follow him through and break it again. And then Max doing what Max is renowned for doing and just taking it to that 11th, 10th, and always impressive work from him.
Especially in the car that is third fastest.
Depending on the circuit, yeah. It's a car that's sort of either third or second fastest.
Well, it's never the fastest car, is it?
It's never the fastest.
Until Max gets into it.
Yeah, it's never the fastest. But Max is, again, as we've said before, is the driver that makes that difference. And we'll get into talking about drivers that make the differences and the results that drivers have. We'll go on our team-by-team analysis, and as we do, we're in championship order, where McLaren still stay at the top of pecking order. Piastri qualified second, as we've already mentioned. Norris qualified 10th after dropping it in that final qualifying session, tapping the wall and not running in Q3. Piastri, as we know now, goes on to win the race P1, and Norris has a fairly decent recovery drive to P4. And yeah, I think this is starting to show the two sides of that McLaren garage.
Yes, I think obviously Piastri didn't put foot wrong at all this weekend, really, with just Verstappen pipping him to pole. But then obviously kept his cool throughout the start of the race, kind of did what Max likes to do to other drivers, go up on that inside and just stay there. And with Norris, I think it's annoying that he crashed, I think, in qualifying, because I think we could have had a very good race if he had been up there as well, for the considering the pace he had to kind of get through the rest of the grid. But I think whilst both of them did put in good performances in the race, I think this race kind of proved that McLaren aren't as ahead with their car as we think they are, or certainly I thought they were. I mean, you take qualifying, Mercedes were hot on their tails, and then Max Verstappen was quicker. They do have a better car in the actual race, but I think they would have really struggled to fight Max if he didn't get a penalty.
I think it's a combination of neither team has the best car, and it very much comes down to the drivers, which is what we want. It's just interesting to see then what kind of a difference that makes and how that varies from Grand Prix to Grand Prix. Like you say, it was another almost faultless weekend from Piastri, and Leclerc's got different tactics to how he fights Max, to how we've seen other drivers fight Max. But for me, Piastri doing to Verstappen what Verstappen does to others, as you put it, reminded me of when Hamilton was fighting him and going, "Oh, it's funny when you don't like it when I do it to you, but if you do it to me, it's perfectly okay." And I quite like that because it was just such a little tease of what we should hopefully get at some point this season between the two of them. And it's something we never really got to see from Norris because he either disappeared into the distance on the few occasions that it happened, or it was Austria. And it didn't go to plan. But it's just so interesting now that, from a team point of view, Piastri and Norris now have the same number of Grand Prix victories, but Piastri technically ahead if you count his sprint race win from Qatar. And to kind of make it even more impressive, Piastri's only finished off the podium once this season, obviously on Australia. And you've just got to ask yourself, if he hadn't gone into the grass, how much further ahead would he be? It'd probably be almost a Grand Prix victory ahead after five races. That's sus not suspiciously good, but just really, really good territory to be in, and shows the difference there, I think, because Verstappen was praising him after the race, going, "He barely makes any mistakes. It's difficult to get past him." And I think, as much as he was annoyed that he did to him what he would happily have done to someone else, he kind of game respects game in a way. Norris just, it's, there's no doubt he's a good driver, but doesn't mean you are then on that next level that Piastri is already demonstrating. And the key kind of evidence this weekend of that was his kind of rookie strategy to try and overtake Hamilton. I'm amazed it took him that long when it's so obvious what to do there, especially when we've seen it done a number of times in the past from other drivers. You look at Leclerc and Verstappen, I think, in 22, and obviously Hamilton and Verstappen in 21, when they were getting creative with how to best manage that situation. You just go, did no one bring that up in a briefing to go, if you're chasing someone down at this point, do that? And I wonder if that's Norris thing, is that a team thing, is a combination, and it's just more kind of evidence of them not being used yet to being in this position in a championship and how to handle that, or is it just kind of Norris again being his own worst enemy in some way and trying to not overthink, but potentially overthink, if that makes sense.
I will caveat and say that I think Norris learnt the first time around, but Hamilton went off the brakes far more than Norris thought he would and had to take avoiding action and overtook him as a result.
Hamilton forced
But
him
you'd hope that
into
he would have
the
been a bit more aware of that at the same time, though, because again, he knows the kind of driver that Hamilton is. I think you, again, especially in that circuit, you'd go back to 21 and just go, if I come across Hamilton, maybe just have that in the back of my mind. But I know it's easy to say in retrospect, but again, you go in as prepared as possible to a weekend.
The problem is also at that point you are racing Lewis Hamilton on track for position, and
Didn't stop Piastri at some of the one of the most hairiest points on the track.
it didn't stop Piastri because also Hamilton was on degraded tires by that point, but Lando was coming through early on when Lewis still had the grip. And when Lewis Hamilton comes off the brakes and starts to push you wide, not in a Verstappen-y sort of way, but in that sort of affect of just sort of going, don't think you're quite pulling that trick on me just yet. And when you look at the data and how much time Lewis lost doing that, Lewis was fighting Lando for track position at that point. They were fighting each other for race order. It wasn't the case of Lewis was just making Lando's life difficult for the sheer hell of it. Lewis had the opportunity to keep that McLaren behind because he knew that in that period he could extract that pace and force Norris to think differently on his strategy. I think Oscar's run through that first sector was exactly what Lando needed to do with Max last season as well, which was give him a dose of his own medicine and leave the stewards to sort it out. It paid off for Oscar this time round, and he had some unbelievably strong pace coming through, slinging it around the outside of Hamilton as well on the back of the circuit, blinder of a move on a dirty part of the track. But it was
Second time he's done him that to him as well this
it
season.
was Yeah, it was something he needed to do to maintain a gap to Max through the stops as well. His start put him in that position, and all race long, there are these little moments where Oscar's efforts really made this his Grand Prix. Lando's race was clean and tidy, no fault really. He made the strategy work and it paid off. But when it came to that sort of losing time behind Lewis and lacking that preparation through old race viewings, you've said 2021 Max versus Lewis and 2022 Charles versus Max. And the fact that we also saw Charles versus Max at Bahrain as well, where you've got these sort of moments where you're diving into a point where you then earn the DRS. It's a known thing. Even watching F2 that weekend, we saw some drivers
Yeah, we
gambling.
had that a bit with Lewis and Lando in Bahrain last weekend as well, where it took him a couple of goes to get past him in the first sector of the track, and you go, you're gonna have to wake up a little bit earlier if you want to get past Hamilton, even if he is in a not tip top Ferrari.
Yeah, it's one of those things that Lando just doesn't have the conviction of his own efforts at the moment to really make these sort of moves stick. And the net result is the game for McLaren goes on, but for now, Piastri looks to have the upper hand. He's become the first Aussie to lead the championship since his manager, Mark Webber, did it in 2010. And Oscar now equals Lando for the wins, as we've said. So over their careers, Oscar's now got a 10% win ratio, whereas Lando's somewhere around the sort of 3 to 4 mark, I believe.
And 100% pole to win conversion, which is not going to last, but it's nice to see how long he can make that go on for.
Yeah.
Because you've got to think at this point, it's either a mechanical failure or a mistake of his own that's going to cause that rather than anything else.
I will add that though that Oscar came in to McLaren when they were a better team as well. Plus you've got kind of the other. You think of like back when maybe like Monza with Danny Ric and Lando. Lando played the team game there and didn't fight Ricciardo for the win.
True, but that was a choice, and he could have won a couple of the Grand Prix that season if he'd, well, definitely in Russia, for example, if he'd listened to the team. There's been opportunities for it, so I get what you're saying, but it's just interesting that there have been opportunities and, you know, made a decision to play the team game, fair enough. I can see why you wouldn't want to risk that, but I wonder if you put other drivers in that situation, is that happening?
Well, and very crucially as well, remember Lando gave up track position so that Oscar could win his first race.
Again, and I don't know if Oscar would have done that in reverse.
It's one of those things that just needs sort of
You're not there to make friends at the end of
time.
the day. You're there to win at kind of at any cost, and you patch up your friendship or any relationship afterwards. You know, you see the relationship that Vettel and Webber had, that Rosberg and Hamilton had, and how quickly that got disintegrated, and they've worked on it since then. But it's kind of, I'm going to do what I have to do to get ahead here, and if that means annoying the guy next to me, then so be it. And I don't know if Lando has that extra level of ruthlessness in him. He says he can win a championship by being a nice guy, but I think we talked about this after Japan, maybe. I don't recall anyone winning a championship by being a nice guy in the car. You can be a nice guy out of it, certainly, but you're not going to win it by being nice and polite inside the car. I don't have anyone coming to mind going, he didn't. He was always perfectly fine. There was never any ruthlessness there from that driver.
Yeah, I think Oscar's got a bit more of the, not necessarily ruthlessness, but just sort of
Clinical.
determinism to do it. Yeah, he's that more clinical that he's able to make it sort of work. When it comes to
He
being.
doesn't. He also, of course, he doesn't dwell on his mistakes. I remember you saying, I think last weekend, that he made that he beats himself up so much about it and focuses maybe too much on his mistakes rather than just looking at it, learning, applying, bam, which is clearly what Oscar does. And I think that's also more of a hindrance. And we thought he'd gotten over that after last year in the winter break, and when he came back in Australia and seemed to have taken it up a notch, but then seems to have reverted back a little bit. And it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out over the rest of the season.
It'll be an interesting argument to keep an eye on. But when it comes to sort of the clinicality and everything, we get to second place in the championship. Mercedes, Russell qualified third, Antonelli qualified fifth, and then they would go on to finish fifth for Russell and sixth for Antonelli. So a bit of a sort of drifting backwards for the team this weekend, but it was a hard-fought competition. And I know that I say consistency is key, but you didn't both have to qualify in exactly the same positions back to back. And then again, Alonso also this weekend bagged his fourth Q13. So congratulations to him. Decent pace from both drivers through the race. This same basic consistency we've come to expect from both of them this year. I think that's much like we were saying about Fornaroli in Formula 2, is this idea that just keep plugging away, keep earning these points, is just going to keep them within a sound touching distance and wait for the other drivers around them to start making these mistakes.
I think both Russell and Antonelli had great single lap pace, especially Russell with his Q3 time. But I think they struggled more than usual in the race with the tyres falling away from them near the end, which obviously allowed then a charging Leclerc to snatch that final podium spot from Russell. But I think overall it was a solid performance and they took home the maximum points that they could have taken home this weekend. I don't think they were as strong as the top four.
I just the overall pace for Mercedes just wasn't there this weekend to really keep them up there.
No.
It was.
Nothing much to add on that one, to be honest. I think, like you say, they got the maximum out of it. They knew they weren't going to get any more, even if they tried something audacious, a little bit like they attempted with Antonelli in Bahrain. So they just thought, well, this just isn't our track. Let's just get a solid haul of points. Fifth and sixth isn't too shabby. And we'll just move on kind of and do the next thing in Miami. I think it reminded me a little bit of what I thought the strategy was going to be for Alonso last year in Bahrain, as he showed, and then subsequently kind of disproved of, I know this car is going to be good in some places more than others, so I'll pick and choose my battles. And then obviously it turned out the Aston Martin just wasn't a great car last year. But with the Mercedes, you know it can be a good car and a better car. And this was just it being a good car rather than it being a great one. And they're all right with that because at the end of the day, they're P2 in the constructors.
Yeah, they aren't having to sort of overextend it to achieve these results. And I think when they come to push it, they can get the pace out of it. But there's no point sort of extending yourself into that point of earning the risk when that reward isn't necessarily always going to be there. Meanwhile, Red Bull, Verstappen, as we've already said, qualifies on pole. Tsunoda qualifies eighth, not the worst. It's certainly the highest qualifying for Max's teammate since Baku last year. Max, as we know, goes on to finish second, and Tsunoda DNFs after crashing out with Pierre Gasly in the first sector of the race. And it is just a bit of an unfortunate coming together for the two of them, as I think Tsunoda could have played a very interesting and important role for Red Bull this weekend, which should have been fending off Lando Norris as he came through. He certainly had the machinery to do it, and Jeddah's a tricky track to overtake around. I think it would have been interesting to see what he could have done from that position.
And we've not seen those two fight either, so that would have been interesting just to see what that would have looked like if nothing else going. That was incredibly easy, or that was a different crash, or that was. It would just be nice to have some data.
Yes, yeah, but I think for Max, clearly not happy about having to swallow his own medicine, but them's the brakes. When you come off the brakes and know there's not the gap at the second part of the corner, that's on you. Red Bull also gambled this one the wrong way around. They should have made Max give up the place because he lost by less than 5 seconds, so clearly their decision didn't pay off. I think lucky for him it was lap one, so he handed down a 5 second penalty. When Lawson did this later on in the race, he earned a 10 second
That
penalty.
That I didn't like. I was going to bring that up later.
Yeah.
We talked about that. It just smacked of a bit of unfairness. I mean, we'll talk about it later, but it just, again, I think, like you say, it was the wrong sort of penalty to give Verstappen. Brundle was saying that on commentary as well, going, that might not be a penalty, depending on how they play this. And you could argue him finishing second is punishment. And from how he looked after the race, you'd maybe believe that. But at the same time, I
Yeah.
think you should have just made him swap the place back and then. To go off what you were saying earlier to me, you wouldn't have needed Norris to be up there as much then because of good qualifying, because you would have had them on kind of an equal footing and it would have been interesting to see what those two could have done then. And you'd had a maybe actual fight for the lead for the first time this season.
Well, is it now that are Norris and Verstappen now on equal points?
2 points separating them.
Oh, 2 points separating them. I think. This was a track the car liked a little better. I think Verstappen was the fastest man overall this weekend. And like we've been saying, I don't think McLaren had an answer for Verstappen's pace if it wasn't for that penalty. In terms of Tsunoda, just incredibly unlucky. I mean, to be out on the second corner of the first lap, it hurts, but that's what happens in a tight street circuit. I mean, I don't think either him or Gasly were to blame. It was just one of those things. It was annoying
It
that
did look very 50-50.
it did. And it's just annoying that we didn't get to see either of them have the good race that I think they would have had.
It would have been an interesting race for Tsunoda, and he's certainly finding form and finding pace in that car, and I want to now see what his long run pace looks like. I think the slightly more open space of like Miami might
I was going to
he
say, we
might
need
have
to say Miami for open space.
It's a bit more, it's a bit wider at certain points, which will be interesting to see how he's able to sort of make the most of it. But
Feel like he might have been trying to think ahead to the next couple of racing, going, oh, no, I don't mean Miami. I mean, oh, no, not Imola. Monaco? No, not Monaco. Canada? No, not Canada. Shit. What do we say? Spain?
yeah, I think Miami has some open enough bits that we're going to see a bit more of an interesting race from Sonoda. So it's not too far gone. And again, Gasly's on the board when it comes to points. So it would have been nice to have seen what they are able to do. And I think Miami is going to be able to sort of be a fun continuation of that with sort of a flat, hot street circuit. We're going to get different results, but yeah, for Verstappen, you could tell his demeanor post race. Told you everything you needed to know about that. The fact that he was not happy about that and not happy
I'm just
about the
quite
result.
impressed he didn't say anything because Max from a few years ago would not have cared one iota about
He
any kind of penalties or money that would have been coming his way.
hinted that he wanted to say something. He
Oh,
said,
yeah, but that's different to what we
I'd
were
like
used
to
to
say
him from
something.
yesteryear.
I'd like to say something, but we're not allowed to voice our opinion, which was both a great jab at MBS, who came over to him immediately after at the race when they stood their little sort of podium blobs, and the fact that like he can't openly say what he thinks about that and about the stewards. But I
That's
think
why I love the idea of him just retiring at some point this season and then just going, oh, what are you going to do? Fire me from F1. I'm already gone, mate. And then just absolutely trounce him in just verbal combat.
yeah, it's an interesting one, but I think Red Bull trying to get a measure on their pace. It's McLaren have got the datum point car for this year's season. That is the car that everyone is trying to beat. And some weekends, when the track conditions are right, when the temperature is right, depending on certain aspects and elements, and Verstappen's in the car, he's able to extend that Red Bull above the McLaren and above the Mercedes. The Mercedes is sort of close to the McLaren, but is never really going to be extending itself much beyond the McLaren. It's going to be able to possibly get it to the same level, but I don't think it's going to be able to push beyond it. The Red Bull with Verstappen, and crucially with Verstappen, is able to get up to McLaren's marker and beyond it at points. This race weekend, I think he was hampered a bit by tyres and by strategy because the quickest way around that circuit was the one stopper. We saw so many drivers utilizing that sort of fast one stop. And if you could make the tires last, you could have a pretty good run of things. And Charles Leclerc was a good metric for that. Qualified fourth, finished third. Meanwhile, his teammate qualified seventh, finishes seventh. Lewis Hamilton in the Ferrari.
I think Leclerc was doing his best Al Pacino impression from Heat this weekend by demanding that the car essentially give him everything it's got in order to drag it up the grid that extra bit further, both in qualifying and the race. Hamilton, I'm still going to give him a little bit of a pass for now, just because he's not denying it's his fault. Essentially, he blames himself for not getting to grips with it yet. And I just kind of remember that it's still his first time with Ferrari everything, in, well, ever. So it's going to take a little time, and it's just frustrating. It's taking more time than we would have liked. We've seen with Carlos, for example, and Williams, that he's starting to get more comfortable with that car, and if they just leave him alone because he knows what he's doing for 5 minutes, then he can kind of bed himself in there. Lewis just isn't quite there yet, which is a shame because we know what he's capable of, we know what the car's capable of when Leclerc is kind of giving it full beans, and there should be upgrades coming soon. But it's just frustrating, and I think if it wasn't Hamilton, we'd obviously have more questions, but we know what he's capable of. So I think if we're still at this point at the end of the season or at the summer break, then there's more for it. But a little bit, as we hinted at with our Formula 2 review so far, we're going to reserve, or at least I'm going to reserve judgment for a little bit longer because it feels a bit too premature to crucify him otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. I think Hamilton is yet to fully find his form and be comfortable with that car, but nonetheless, it's not the worst result. He still bagged 6 points for the team, but we finally got that Ferrari podium. I mean, I think Leclerc looked strong really strong this weekend, and we all know he likes and is good around a street circuit. I think he had great pace near the end of the race to bring that fight to Russell, who was struggling on his tyres whilst Leclerc was on much newer mediums.
If
And
you keep doing it a few extra laps to the end of these Grand Prix, because we just get close to a battle towards the end for a podium position and we just run out of time, and you go, just two or three more laps, please. That would have been quite nice.
Leclerc's pace was phenomenal, really, extending those mediums through the opening section and just sort of keeping everything moving really put him onto a strong foot, because then when you the longer you run those hards as well, the more and more raceable a tire they become, especially as the track revs in, as the temperature drops down, he can it's just easier to sort of maintain them and keep them sort of within their window. So he had the absolute premium strategy there and was able to really start extracting a lot of pace from that car. It is a bit mad that this is Ferrari's first Grand Prix podium of the season. And like you said, we can tell Hamilton is still coming to terms with the car and its nature. We mentioned how Max's big skill is his adaptability, and we're seeing the counter of that here with Lewis to a certain extent. The car's balance and its point of rotation isn't where he wants it, and he's struggling to get used to it. He's struggling to find how to sort of turn a car that you have to turn on its rear axle, not on its front axle, and it reads that way. You can tell how Charles is able to sort of get the car starting to rotate and then pins the throttle to really get it in, whereas Lewis is so much used to. Or so much more used to having a car that you get the nose really in and then put your foot down. Charles has got sort of used to this balance being a bit more sort of mid-centric in the car, and that's it's taking its time for Lewis to get there. But in the end, for me, yeah, tale of two kitties for Ferrari this week. And I think yeah, Charles did well sort of fending off a hard pushing Lando behind, but I think ultimately his strategy really kept him well ahead in that fight. Meanwhile, swapping back into fifth place, it's Williams. Albon qualified 11th, Sainz qualified 6th, and then they would go ahead and finish 9th for Albon and 8th for Sainz, just ahead, building up ahead of steam now. There's some good pace in this Williams, and the drivers work well together. Sainz's pace was relentless, and Alex was able to latch on and stay with him to defend against Hadjar. And all in, it's a good weekend for Grove as they shuffle forwards again. Possibly sort of reading into their drivers what their skills are, what their fortes are. Someone watching back what would have been Singapore 2022, I want to say, or 2023, it would have been, where Sainz tows or Norris behind him as sort of like a buffer all the way to the podium, and impressive work.
It seems Sainz has really found his form at Williams now, with, it was both strong qualifying and race result. And like you said, Sainz did what Sainz does best around street tracks, which is help create a DRS train in order for then Albon to keep Hadjar behind so that the team could come home with a P8 and P9 finish.
And if you look at how exhausted Hajar was, it wasn't for a lack of trying to get past. He made some dummy moves. He was throwing some shapes. He was having to get out of the sort of dirty air of both Williams at points down sort of the front straight to try and keep his car just sort of switched on. But he was up there battling for it. But Williams were not going to make it easy, and they've got enough pace in that car to get up into those points positions and hang on to those points positions as well. They are no longer a team that just lucks into having points. They are now, I'd say, sort of firmly cemented as being part of that midfield scrap for those sort of bottom three, four points positions. And that's good. That's what we want to see.
Not much to add, really, other than it's the best start to a season in 9 years, I want to say. And it's just going to be great for them if they can keep this momentum up. And it's just really awesome to see. They're not going to get higher than fifth in the constructors, but I think if you told them you're going to get fifth at the start of the season, they've bitten your fudging hand off and gone, we'll have that.
It's a good foundation for them to build on for their next year.
Especially when they're focusing already on next year's car at this point, and you go, oh, we're not even putting the eggs in the basket for this year. Sweet.
And you've got these two drivers that are getting used to working with each other as well, not just getting used to sort of working at Williams. Certainly for Sainz, this is a great year,
Segue.
but it's sort of drivers that are working really nicely together. And that works for Haas as well. Ocon qualified 19th, Behrmann qualified 15th, and then they'd go on to finish 14th for Ocon and 13th for Ollie Behrmann.
No point, but no problem, I don't think, because they're just chugging along nicely and, as we say, working as a team to go after points where they can give it a go, not for just yet who gets them. Obviously, Ocon's still very much ahead in the standings due to that ridiculous fifth place from China, but that's kind of all they need to be doing, and I think they don't mind as long as they keep just giving it a good go. And sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't, and they went a million miles away, and I think that's all right. I think a little bit like Mercedes, as I mentioned after Bahrain, they're kind of the B team. Mercedes, in some ways, of going, we know we're not going to be there all the time, but that's all right. We'll just learn and try and see what we can apply for the next one and see if there's anything that can be carried over, and if not, we'll just go and learn some more.
Yeah, it's a weekend that they can be happy about. Ocon made up some places and had a good bit of pace through the evening. He then played the team game to let Behrmann through, who'd qualified ahead of him and was on the better strategy. So all in, it was a sound race for them, but not a circuit that really benefited their car. I will say Ocon had a phenomenal stint. He ran super long on his first set of tyres, so he did well to preserve them. And clearly it's a car that, again, they understand enough as to how it treats its tires, how it heats its tires, how it loads them through corners, that they can start making these interesting strategy plays that aren't just sort of a complete Hail Mary of stay out, there might be a safety car, to we know we can run long and then we can apply pressure later on in the race. We can put on a more competitive tire, we're on a lower fuel load. They understand a hell of a lot more what's going on with that car now, which is a good sign.
I agree. I have honestly nothing to add. You've all said it.
We don't really have anything to add for Aston Martin either. Alonso qualified 13th, finished 11th, and Stroll qualified 16th and finished 16th, which isn't quite the accolade you think it is, considering that two drivers ahead of him crashed out. So in reality, best result for Stroll should have been 14th, but it wasn't.
They're
They
going to be
were.
battling Sauber hard for that P10 position by the end of the season.
They're going to be slipping. Yeah. If Alpine start accruing points more regularly and Racing Bulls continue doing what they're doing, it's going to be harder for Aston Martin to really stay anywhere near this sort of field. And
I wonder where this was in Lawrence Stroll's plan.
He's looked at what Alpine are doing with their 100 race plan, and he's thought, I'll have some of that, and I'll start again right now. And so that's what's happening.
I thought you were going to say he looked at Alpine, saw their plan, and thought, you know what? Let's not have a plan.
Both work.
They looked at
Both could be
what
very
can I.
feasible.
Yeah, no dinner for Bortoletto either, or possibly no flight home, because of course he was flying home with his manager, Fernando Alonso, who he nearly pinned into the wall going into turn one, as didn't expect Alonso to have a healthy double dose
They'll
of disaster.
need some new overalls for Alonso after that. That's all I know.
Yeah, his British Racing Green might be a bit more British Racing Brown at the moment. But anyway, we'll get to what Bortoleto got up to in a bit. First, we've got Racing Bulls to get through. Lawson qualified 12th, finished 12th. So the same accusations that I leveled at Stroll are applicable here. Meanwhile, Hadjar qualified 14th, finished 10th, really making up a bit of lost time. And again, showing up Lawson a little bit.
It was another strong week for Hadjar. He probably had the pace to overtake Albon alone, but with the Williams working together, it made it a little bit too difficult for him. But he still got one point, which I think was very well deserved. And yeah, with Lawson, he's still struggling to find his footing, isn't he? I think he's driving a little too aggressively right now. I think we kind of saw that last year that that's kind of his. He likes to drive aggressively anyway, but I think with the fact that he's now kind of got that point to prove, I think it's just now hurting him more and more as time is going on. I think he just needs to calm down a bit.
I'll look at that with a little bit of a caveat because I think I'd rather see a scrappy driver pushing it hard than not doing anything. And obviously, you can tell he's hungry and he could get to grips with the car and prove the point. And if that means doing the job and not making it look pretty, then I'm all kind of for it because as long as you get the job done, then good on you. I don't care. But I think it is just more proof that there is a lack of support still in that whole organization for him. A little bit kind of reminiscent of doing with Alpine. It's kind of, we've had you for so long, we needed to do something with you, and this is what we've ultimately decided. It's, yeah, it's very odd. It's like you see in comic book films where the studio says, oh, we can't use a character for so long because we've got plans, and then 10 years pass and you don't see anything, and then they finally do something with the character. This was your plan. A like three episode thing on a TV channel no one's heard of. That was your bit. That's why we couldn't use this character before. It's a bit odd. And yeah, I again going back to what you were saying earlier, Lina, it would have been nice to get a few more laps in because you could see him kind of sprinting up behind Hadjar towards the end, and you just think, oh, maybe if you could have got close enough, you could have maybe tried getting Hadjar to slingshot him past to Williams and see, or can one of us get past and try something else there with it. But obviously, we've run out of time. And going back to what we touched on with Red Bull, I think the penalty seemed a bit harsh on Lawson. We had this again, there was a move he did on, I forget who it was, might have been Tsunoda or not Tsunoda, Bortoleto potentially in Bahrain that he did pretty much carbon copy of in China. Was perfectly fine in China, gets a penalty for it in Bahrain, and you go, why? And then does exactly the sort of thing that happened between Verstappen and Piastri here and gets a much worse penalty for it. And you go, again, why? It wasn't immediately clear enough. Just love to hear the thought process when they make these decisions.
I don't know if Lawson was necessarily sprinting up to the back of Hadjar or whether or not
He
that.
looked a lot closer
I think it was more a case of that
before they
DRS
crossed the line.
really starting to back the cars up as well. So while Lawson might have been able to get something out of the car on low fuel, I think pinch of salt, devil's advocate, and all that, there is sort of two sides to that
How
coin.
unlike you.
Yeah. Yeah, great from Hadjar, outqualified by Lawson, so he is finding something. But I think for Lawson, it was scrappy. There were messy moves. It didn't really show him in a great light. The pace is in that car, but you have to drive it with consistency and a bit more of a flow. And I don't think that's something that Lawson's achieving right now. The worst part for
It
him.
is only his third race in that car as well now, obviously, so he's
Yeah.
still trying to learn in some ways.
The worst part for him, though, is Yuki Tsunoda's being given testing of the previous car to get up to speed with how the.
Yeah, I saw that and thought, oh, it's funny how you suddenly decided to do that, isn't it? I wonder what gave you that brilliant idea.
So.
Was it someone hitting you over the head with a conker?
Yeah, so we've got Tsunoda being given far more of a chance than Lawson, and then being given the testing on top of that, sort of going
It's such a
worse.
mirror to Alpine, isn't it? Because you just go, could you make this a bit more obvious for us as to what you're all up to? I'm not quite, it's not quite, it's too subtle for me still what your plan is here. Do you mind just making it a bit more obvious for us that aren't quite there yet?
So it's an interesting series of events for Red Bull and Racing Bulls, but we'll see how it develops. Meanwhile, you mentioned Alpine. Obviously, Gasly qualifies 9th and goes on to DNF, and Doohan qualifies 17th and finishes 17th.
Oh, that was a weekend that really hurt them, wasn't it? I think,
Team that loves to get in its own way, doesn't it?
yeah, it is. I think Gasly would have been on for a very good race if it wasn't for the crash, but that strategy for doing, I mean, that was terrible. I don't know why they decided to pit him on the first lap when all the other cars were going to be bunched together like that. Were they banking on the fact that there would be another safety car? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to pit that early.
I think we know what they're doing.
Yeah,
It's how
I.
can we justify Colapinto coming in after the summer or sooner? Answers on a postcard, please.
Yeah, if the Doohan has six races to prove himself, argument is to be believed. He has one more race. He has Miami to do
Well,
something.
no, because by their definition of six races, that include the sprint race in China, and they'll have to announce it sometime between now and Miami. Alpine logic.
This is very true. We ought not to rule that out as an option. But yeah. Doohan's mishandling, I think, is going to be one of the big sort of shadows that hangs over this season. That second
If you're
stop.
Red Bull, you certainly hope so. Gives you get kind of a bit of free
Frankly,
space
what can you do?
to get rid of that.
But that second stop shot apart any chance of a solid finish for him. Hard to t tell, though, just through the main feed, because where was the coaching to extend that first stint so the second stint would make it to the end? Where was the ridiculous strategy coming in? They sort of got lucky that we didn't see too much of them on the live feed to really understand what went wrong for them this weekend, other than
I
pants strategy.
just thought of the one time it would be useful to use the Sky Glass for something. Could have
Oh,
just
what's it
ridden
called?
on board with him and listened to his teammate the whole time. I might have actually learned something. Damn, it's finally been proven to be useful for something.
You can do that on Now TV now. You don't have to go all the way through to getting Sky Glass. You can just have
Well,
Now TV running a second device and pick a driver.
what's we were? Perhaps that's what we need to do with Sauber then as well.
Yeah, just constantly have
Oh, they're fine. We don't need to worry about Sauber.
nursery
They know
devices.
what they're doing.
What Sauber done?
But it's more that we might
Or do you
actually
just miss
see
seeing
them on track.
Hulkenberg?
We might see them on track. We might have something to say about them. Who knows? Hulkenberg qualified 18th, finished 15th. Bortoleto qualified 20th, finished 18th. It's the first time we've
It's
had a
kind of where we
Sauber.
expect them to be.
Yeah, this is, however, the first time we've had a Sauber start P20 this season, which is interesting. Otherwise, largely forgettable race for them. Hülkenberg effectively only making one position across the race, while Bortoleto stayed plumb last, jousting with his manager, not expecting Alonso to get that double helping of toe down the front straight and then come rocketing through. Could have been much worse, especially given how slight the touch was that sent Tsunoda and Gasly out, but they were on sort of relatively untouched tyres and high fuel load, so the cars
It was very Fernando Alonso to be able to touch a car and a wall at the same time and kind of get through
converge.
relatively unscathed.
Yeah, it was very Alonso. But given the fact that we're trying to talk about Steak Sauber and we're talking
That's
about Alonso,
how quickly that went, though.
yeah, there we go. So nothing more to add about them. We'll move into our winners and spinners. And we'll start with winners, Ellie Mae and Timo. If you could say it at the same time, that'd be perfect. It would cut down a bit more of the recording length.
Give us a countdown.
Yeah,
We
so I
can
was
make
about
sure
to
we
say
get
we'll
really in
give us a
sync.
countdown.
3, 2, 1.
Williams.
Williams. You somehow clocked that up. I'll solve it in the edit. Ellie Mae, why Try again
Williams?
in a minute.
I went for Williams, well, mainly for what I've said. I mean,
Funny that.
yeah, Sainz, I think, put in a very good qualifying and race. Obviously, the teamwork helped them to bag a lot of points, but points that count. And it's just a team that are really together at the minute, and I'm looking forward to seeing where Williams are going to go.
Ditto.
Ditto. Perfect.
If I had to
Meanwhile.
have a different winner, just for variety, I would add Leclerc in there as well.
Okay, he's a sound option. Meanwhile, for me, Oscar Piastri, really, spotless drive across the weekend and getting his shoulder in when it came to dealing with Max Verstappen and doing something that other McLaren drivers may not have done previously. Spinners, I'll give you a count in again. Let's try and do it at the same time. Are you ready? 3, 2, 1.
Aston
Aston
Martin.
Martin. No, Timo, you're
Oh.
still slow. A
I
bit of
even
Aston
started
Martin.
before she did on that one,
Yeah.
honestly. I
Yeah.
even slowed down so that we
I
wouldn't.
slowed down for you.
I slowed down for you.
You know what we're doing? We're being Alonso and Bortoleto, and it's just not working.
No, you're being Sainz and Albon. You're sort of towing one another through it, but there we go.
I think the reasoning speaks for themselves here with Aston Martin. It's just that they're in what P7 at the moment, and they'll be lucky if they keep that by the end of the season. It's going to be P9 or P10. I mean, Sauber, no one's expecting anything from them anyway. So the fact that they've already got more points than last year is a testament in itself. So if they can just bung in another race or two like that at some point, Aston Martin are going to be in big trouble, especially if Alpine's not being so French about everything.
They want to give Adrian Newey maximum wind tunnel time.
This is
But
possible.
do you want this, Ellie May, at this point? Because Alonso, yes, on the one hand, but then again, maybe you do want this because you've got the ultimate example of how useless Stroll is then, when he has a car Adrian Newey has gifted to him and he still manages to bung it.
I was going to say more that the team will have more money and the team will have more resources.
Well, but that means you want them to succeed, and I was trying to question why.
Because I want them to succeed. Why wouldn't
Oh,
I? No,
just because.
I want them to succeed. I mean, Fernando Alonso is one of my favorite drivers, and I like Aston Martin as a team, so
You want it to be worthy of the name that it holds, basically. That's fair.
yeah, and that.
We'll wait and see what they do. They'll have a lot of wind tunnel time to play with, and maybe that will be appealing to Max Verstappen, who will take a sabbatical and then move to Aston Martin when they finally decide whether or not they want to keep a Fernando Alonso, who will be like 60 billion years old, or the boss's son. Meanwhile, my spin this weekend, Alpine, I feel they bungled Jack's strategy and they didn't have the confidence to leave him out on that sort of run. Really, they should have left him to the end. Net result was Doohan and Stroll were the only drivers to net move backwards once you factor in Pierre and Yuki disappearing. So, I think that says enough for me. Meanwhile, predictions review, points for everyone this week. I earn a point for Piastri's win. Ellie May picks up
Is
points.
this your first lot of points, by the way?
Yes.
Thought so.
Ellie May
Wow.
picks up points for getting P2 and P3 correct. Timo and I then bag a point for fastest lap. So I'm on the board. Hurrah.
I should
Meanwhile,
still just be a point ahead, right?
no, you're a little more than a
Well,
point.
she was. So I knew I was 2 points ahead last week. Then obviously, Ellie May gets 2 points here, but then I get another one, so I should just eke out a little bit of a lead.
So Australia, Ellie May is a point ahead of you. China, Ellie May is a point ahead of you. I'm still nowhere to score.
Don't
Japan,
worry, we assumed that.
you're both tied.
Bahrain, then I took it.
Bahrain, Timo is now on 5 points. Ellie May is still on three. Then Saudi, Timo, you're now on six. Ellie May on five, and I'm on two. So I'm getting there. I'm catching you.
This is my worst season so far.
Congratulations, Alpine. Meanwhile, when it comes to the fantasy F1 round, for Bahrain, Le Victory, 323 points.
I thought you'd read that. I just realized.
What?
Where are we, Jesse?
Oh, yeah, for Saudi Arabia. Yeah, I am in true Anchorman style. If you put it on the screen, I'll read it. Fuck you, San Diego. For Saudi Arabia, Le Victory, 323 points in first. Le Victory, 2310112 in second place, 251 points. And Ixerot, I guess that's something to do with the color red.
See you, Rose. Yeah.
If me
It's
as
the
my
rule.
Ixerot, I didn't do German at school.
I can tell.
203 points in third place. On the curves, P10, can't grow a moustache, P26, the mixing pot, P33, and Kiwi Burners, P53, with just 7 points. Probably would help to rehire Lawson and get him off double points as he's currently inactive. So, but I don't know how well it's going for that team. Arguably not very well. Overall, Lando still leads 951 points. Oh no, retakes the lead, doesn't he? Because of course, I think Ellie May led after last week.
Not a good week.
951 points to Lando. Can't grow a moustache, 944 points like the Porsche, and then Big Reach, 894 points. The Cat Dads are in P12, the Mixing Pot, P26, on the curves, P30, and Best Clique, P53, with 94 points yet to even crack into triple digits. Woofed.
I figured they must have joined late because the teams and the drivers they have are not bad enough to warrant that many points. And
That few
I don't know what
points.
happened there.
Yeah, why are the Red Bull rejects no longer last?
And don't worry, you're P52. So
52?
you're not far. Yeah, up to 53. But considering you've at least broken triple digits on that team somehow,
Yeah,
you might have
that's
some competition for the bottom end of the grid.
Manuel Winkler must have just joined because 94 points, I think, is like the overall score he could have got for this team. Norris on 72, Hajar on with 8 takes him to 80. Antonelli gets 15 and Albon gets 10. So that takes him to what, 90, 105. Take away 17 and 6 for Gasly and Alpine plus 12 for Haas. Yeah, 94. So this is it. This is his first
That's
round.
all right. Give it a few races, and you'll be back in P53 then, anyway, and
I
everything will
reckon
be
give
back to
it
normal.
ne I reckon give it Miami.
We have a lot of Germans in this.
We are a, the
We're a
Germans
multicultural bunch. Steffi
love
Singh, Isaac Gurk. I assume I'm pronouncing your names wholly wrong. Timo
Considering you've just
Werner.
said you didn't study any of this at any level whatsoever, you can safely assume you're butchering all of it, yeah.
I can do a good accent though. Timo Werner,
No,
Max
you can't.
Verstappen.
Timo also counts in this.
Which I feel like Jesse's about to learn for the first time by the look on his face
Yeah,
there.
I didn't look on his face.
I didn't hear what you'd said though, so it was just a look of blankness.
Default mode.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all we've got for this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back soon with some recaps of the feeder series. Actually, we've already recorded a look back for Formula 2. There'll be more coming with those. And remember, it's a bit of a gap until the Miami Grand Prix. In the meantime, Ellie Mae, where can the listeners find you to fill that gap?
Maybe I'll actually get my pictures out for Goodwood Members Meet.
Maybe for
They have,
Miami. Oof,
I
ballsy
hope
call.
so, because then I have then. Well, the problem is then next week I'm going to Bicester Scramble. The week after that is what, Donington Historic. So I need these pictures out. Otherwise, I'm going to have this huge backlog.
Yeah,
I'm
sounds
going
like
to get
a big
cracking.
problem for you. Gotta get busy. Timo, where can the people find you?
On the curbs and on the curbs IndyCar this week, we've got a review of the latest round in Long Beach, which was very entertaining. And I've got an interview out over on the normal On the Curbs podcast with Moroccan rally driver Johanna Benani.
Excellent stuff. And if you want more from me, you can, of course, pick up the latest edition of Classic Car Weekly or listen to the Classic Car Weekly podcast. Both of those, there'll be fresh issues out on Wednesday coming. Can't remember what's in them, though, because we went to press on Thursday with those because of the bank
You
holidays.
never seem to remember what's in these.
It's more concerning when we record these on a Monday night and I've just gone to press. But considering we're recording this on a Monday night and I went to press on Thursday with that because of the bank holiday and
Could
then.
leave yourself a sticky note.
I probably
Be
should.
helpful.
I probably should have a greater understanding of what I do
For
on a
life, maybe,
basis.
generally. A lot of
Yeah.
sticky notes would probably benefit you.
It's
It's a
worrying.
bit like whenever Richard Porter asked Johnny Smith what he's got out this week, and he's like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's professional, is what it is. In other bits of me, though, you can find me either in my workshop reassembling the engine for my MG, or you can find me online as at Jesse on Cars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok and YouTube, where there'll be video content, picture content, and all sorts coming out, including I've got pictures out from members meeting. I think I've got my third set out now, fourth set out now, which was the Halewood and Sheen trophies, some lovely two-stroke Yamaha race engineering on two wheels. Otherwise, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with a preview for the Miami Grand Prix and hopefully some feeder series content in the meantime.